I had to scratch my back. What were you thinking I was doing?
Alright, this is Pure Decking, show number 430 for Thursday, April the 1st, 1970. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I think it's time for a little bit of a change. I think we're gonna go by our real names for this episode. So,
get fucked.
Are you? So, the person you normally know is Morbs. I'm Mantis Elder. The one you normally know as Madman is Cletus Jackson Jr. Cletus, what are you drinking today?
Grape drink and vodka.
Are you big lovin'? No, that's Mantis Toboggan. And are you... Oh, God. I don't actually know how to say that one. We went and found an Abbo name for you. Chyla Obuyan.
Wait, is he Irish all of a sudden? What the fuck?
I don't know. They said that was an Aboriginal name.
Either way, a big social distance high five to everyone. For those playing the home game, it's 110 now. So recorrect your memes. It's no longer 109. It's 110.
So, the only Australian name you know is, what's offensive about Bogan?
Bogan? It just means low class, low socioeconomic class is a Bogan. Hmm. Generally a mullet haircut, flannel shirt, and a V8. Generally wearing thongs, blue pants, AC/DC t-shirt that's ripped, and can pretty much MacGyver up anything for you if they're sober.
Okay.
That's a Bogan. It's not uncommon to hear someone get called that.
Yeah, Rats was in the IRC, he was saying the only Australian name he knows is Bogan, but it's offensive. And I'm like, doesn't sound offensive, but okay.
The word WOG's offensive here.
Yeah, I remember that went over well in the old SKTFM days.
Yeah, but Bogan's not offensive, dude.
Rats, the word was WOG, W-O-G.
It was a slang word for Italian back in the day. Very rarely even heard these days.
Yeah, I usually heard them called WOPs if you're going for slander.
Yeah, that's the Americanized version of it, but we have to shorten anything or chuck an O on the end.
Wasn't the story that Scientologists started calling any non-Scientologist WOGs, and so that's why...
WOGs.
Yeah, WOGs.
Yeah.
WOGs, like the wolves that orcs ride, WOGs. And, yeah, I'm one of those. I've pledged my allegiance to Xenu. I've checked it out. It is not heresy to do that in my religion.
All right. Well, all hail Xenu.
He's our galactic overlord. He is not a god. And he's going to provide us with Mecca to overthrow the Scientologists and possibly superpowers. But if he asks you to get into anything that looks like a DC-42 or DC-10, anything like that, just say no.
Just say no. No to DC-10s. Got it.
I'm cool with where I am. Just give me my Mecca. I'll just go shoot some Scientologists. I mean, Tom Cruise can only make so many good movies, and then you got to put him down.
Well, his time had come ages ago, dude. A 5'4" man.
Well.
But the guy's gone. He doesn't age. That's the problem.
I think the problem was he signed up to do a second Top Gun. That is a movie that does not need a sequel.
It didn't even.
You can't do a sequel.
It didn't need to be made to start with. It was fucking terrible. It was just a billion-dollar promotion for the Air Force. That's all it was. It was a giant fucking ad for the Air Force. And I'll be right back.
All right. Well, let's get right into it here. So the first one, surprising nobody, this is from Threat Post. Apple and Google both track mobile telemetry data, despite users opting out. So it's like, gee, you don't say. Google's Pixel.
Isn't that somehow false advertising or something?
Yeah, probably. I'm sure it runs afoul of something somewhere. Some consumer protection law, but that's why they don't advertise that they're doing it. They give you the little toggle switch. The button's not actually connected to anything, apparently. But Google's Pixel and Apple's iPhone both in privacy hot seat for siphoning mobile device data without consent. Mobile device tracking by Apple and Google takes center stage in a report revealing that despite both allowing users to opt out of sharing telemetry data, they do anyway. Quote, both iOS and Google Android telemetry transmit telemetry, despite the user explicitly opting out of this, wrote researcher Douglas Leith from Trinity College in Ireland in a recently published academic report. The research, entitled Mobile Handset Privacy, Measuring the Data iOS and Android Send to Apple and Google, also found that Google collects up to 20 times more data from its Android Pixel users compared to the amount of data that Apple collects from iOS users. And the reason I'm going with this article, because this article, this news story was posted several times on a lot of the Apple forums. And they were just completely omitting the part about the telemetry stuff and saying, look, Google collects 20 times more data than Apple.
Imagine my
what
shock.
What data could you collect that you can get 20 times the amount of it?
Location.
Location data, contact
list. I think
both of them's
going to be getting that.
You know, websites your phone is going to, what connections are you making, who are you calling? Because, for example, now this depends a lot more on the apps that you've got installed on the phones, too. You know, Facebook, for example, a lot of people think Facebook is listening to you through your phone. Well, they might be, but they're probably not. What they're actually doing is associating that you're talking to somebody on the phone. They know who you're talking to through phone calls. They're then associating, well, that person is looking for something. So since they're connected, maybe this other person will want to see ads about it too. So, you know, that's one of the ways they get some of the creepier ads where it's like, well, I was just talking to my mom about something and there's a Facebook ad for it. Well, it might not be that they were listening to you, but it might be that they, you know, that your mom's been Googling something and then you talk to your mom. And so now it's showing you ads for things your mom was Googling for. Which could lead to some very awkward Thanksgiving conversations, if you understand that's how it works. let's see, Graphene. Okay, so Rats is talking about going to the Graphene OS, which is a Copperhead Forker successor. Okay, yeah. I know there's actually been several attempts at rebuilding Android to be, you know, privacy focused and de-Googling it. You know, I mean, it's like anything, but it's like if you've got these kind of small projects, maybe I'm just paranoid, but I always kind of wonder if like, okay, yeah, sure, they're blocking Google from doing data collection, but what are they doing? You know? And I'm sure most of them are on the up and up, but it always kind of in the back of my mind makes me wonder if somebody's, you know, pre-owning them or something, you know what I mean? So... quote, the phone IMEI, hardware serial number, SIM serial number, and IMSI, handset phone number, etc., are shared with Apple and Google, according to the report. When a SIM is inserted, both iOS and Google Android send details to Apple and Google. iOS sends the MAC address of nearby devices. Fuck. It actually scans the Wi-Fi for MAC addresses nearby and sends that off, too, along with the location data, of course. The other handsets in the home gateway to Apple together with the GPS location. Currently, there are few, if any, realistic options for preventing this data sharing. Set up your phone in the middle of a cornfield away from everything. let's see. parameters of the testing did not include pre-installed apps baked into the manufacturer's mobile operating systems or third-party apps. Rather, researchers focused on data collected by OS-level handset components and functions, such as Apple's Bluetooth unique chip ID, secure element ID, and the transmission of the device's Wi-Fi MAC addresses. Google collects a notably larger volume of handset data than Apple, Leith wrote. During the first 10 minutes of startup, the Pixel handset sends around 1 meg of data to Google, compared with the iPhone sending around 42K of data to Apple. Okay, comparing the data size isn't... I mean, for all you know, it's, Google's just got a shittier compression algorithm.
That's what I was saying. That doesn't mean dick.
When the handsets are sitting idle, the Pixel sends roughly 1 meg of data to Google every 12 hours, compared with the iPhone sending 512 kilobytes to Apple. I.e. Google collects around 20 times more handset data than Apple. Well, how often is the Apple phone sending... how often is iPhone sending shit to Apple? I mean, is that every 12 hours, too? Maybe that's the window, so it must be. Still, it could just be Apple's got better compression. Actually, that would make sense that Apple wouldn't need to send as much, though, because with Apple, you're on a known platform. You're on one of a handful of versions of a phone or iPad, right? Or I guess Macs. Macs are starting to do the, what's that, the M1? The ARM Macs? Wonder if they're doing the telemetry. Well, that might be OS-based, so maybe not. I was actually looking at getting one of those. Looks like it might be fun to play with, but kind of expensive. I usually when I'm buying Apple hardware, I'm going secondhand just because that shit's expensive. But I don't know. I haven't seen any secondhand, and I wouldn't mind playing with the ARM chip, but I don't know that it's worth spending the money on. He noted the operating systems connect to their backend servers on average every 4.5 minutes, whether they're in use or not. So, on an informal basis, Leith did examine a number of the pre-installed apps and services specific to phone manufacturers. He also noted that they also make network connections, despite never having been opened or used. In particular, in iOS, these include Siri, Safari, and iCloud. And on Google Android, these include the YouTube app, Chrome, Google Docs, Safety Hub, Google Messaging, the clock. Okay, what the fuck is the clock sending back to Google? And the Google search bar. That's probably just the NTP traffic on the clock.
What time zone am I in? Am I still in that time zone? What time zone am I in?
Now I'm imagining your clock is the spastic child in the back of the car saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Even though it doesn't know where it's going.
Rats thinks it's so that the you see the so that they know when you're setting alarms, so they know when you're awake and asleep. Well, sure, it helps them break into your home better, so they can further search for more data. When Leith reached out to both Apple and Google to comment on his research, he received mixed results. Quote, to date, Apple has responded only with silence. We sent three emails to Apple's director of user privacy, who declined to even acknowledge receipt of the email. Your Honor, I don't remember seeing that email, Leith wrote. Since then, Apple has made public statements critical of Leith's research and insisting privacy and opt-out measures do exist. Quote, Google responded with a number of comments and clarifications, he wrote. They also say that they intended to push public documentation on the telemetry data that they collect, unquote. And a statement to the numerous publications following the release of the research, Google said, we identified flaws in the researchers' methodology for measuring data volume and disagree with the paper's claims that an Android device shares 20 times more data than an iPhone. According to our research, these findings are off by an order of magnitude, and we share our methodology concerns with the researcher before publication. This research largely outlines how smartphones work. Modern cars regularly send basic data about vehicle components, their safety status, and service schedules to car manufacturers, and mobile phones work in very similar ways. This report details those communications, which helps to ensure that iOS or Android software is up to date, services are working as intended, and that the phone is secure and running effectively. And you know, there's some truth to that, because there is some stuff that probably is just doing routine check-ins in the background, like checking the time, you know, looking for app updates. You know, if you are using iCloud or what's the Google equivalent, the Google Drive stuff, they likely are just routinely checking in. But And you know, the whole 20 times thing, again, they based it on size, and that's not a great indicator. It's an indicator. It's not necessarily a poor one to start with if everything's encrypted and you don't have anything else to work with. But if you're actually holding the devices, you could just root them and, you know, PCAP it locally so you see what the hell's going out. So I don't know that the 20 times size is accurate, but it doesn't surprise me that these guys are collecting data off your phone. And even if you opt out, they're still collecting data. I like what Cycros was putting in the IRC. Apple wants some data, but they don't need it nearly as badly as Google does. Because, of course, that's Google's whole business, is advertising data. So, the privacy dangers of a handset sharing this type of telemetry data are twofold, the researcher noted. One is that Google and Apple can use the data to identify a user and track purchases. Two, Apple and Google could abuse users' trust and track their movements. That said, the researcher does point out that the transition of user data to a device maker's backend is necessary for pushing out security updates for specific models. Collecting user data becomes problematic when it's tied to a specific user, he said. Many studies have shown that location data linked over time can be used to de-anonymize an individual. In the report, the author outlines a number of methods a user can take to avoid sharing mobile data. He said there are no workaround options to prevent an iPhone from sharing data with Apple. There are steps Pixel users can take to prevent the vast majority of data sharing with Google. Quote, with Pixel, a user can choose to start up the phone with the network connection disabled. Next, before the user enables the network connection, they can disable Google-specific services such as Google Play, YouTube, etc. So, yeah, and that's true. And Android does let you do that. You can download a package disabler and go turn things off. As far as the iPhone code goes, yeah, the latest ones probably not, but you can root them. There's still roots out there for them. You got to be careful doing that because there's a lot of fake app stores that are just full of malware these days. But, so don't go to the app stores that say you can download all these paid programs for free. But other than that, and again, it doesn't surprise me that even when you, quote, opt out, these things are still running in the background because, I mean, Google's statement is technically correct that there's a lot of functions on the phone that kind of require reaching back out to their services to, you know, give you service. So, I think RU's got the right answer. If you're that concerned about it, don't have a phone.
No. Don't have a smartphone, which is getting increasingly more difficult.
And that's the thing. Like, for the line of work I'm in, if I didn't have one, I could probably get away with it, but it'd be rough. You know? Like, I'm commonly expected to do things, you know, if nothing else, messaging and email and stuff like that, you know, wherever I am, if something happens. And, you know, I have had to remote into things from my smartphone in the past.
If you didn't have to have it, why the fuck would you have it? If you had the chance to opt out and you didn't take it, what? You're your own worst enemy at that point.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's fashion, it's trendy to have the latest and greatest phone, or they want to play their games on it. Or, you know, what's it, Instagram? Or I guess if you're an OnlyFans person, the camera on your phone is probably your main source of income, so I can understand them having it.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer.
I don't see my changing my stance anytime soon.
I don't think your stance is wrong for what you're trying to accomplish.
I'm not trying to accomplish anything. I just
don't
want to
be left alone. Yeah,
just don't. I don't want it. Like, it's, I don't think we should force anything on people.
No, I don't except know if it's being forced because they're choosing to buy the product.
Well, I think a lot of people just don't know. I think that's my problem. Is it's like, I'd like to have the choice. I'd like to actually understand what. Let me phrase better. It's not that I don't have a choice. I'd like to be able to actually understand what that choice means. And
I'd like to say it's that nobler cause there, Morps, for me, but it's not.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said for the whole just leave me the fuck alone.
Pretty much it, man. I've opted out at this point.
So, you guys got anything else on that?
No, not really.
All right. Well, let's continue the Google bashing here. Moving on. This one's from Forbes. If you're among the billions of people using Chrome, then Google's stark new data harvesting disclosures should come as a nasty surprise. Not really, if you've been paying attention. Worse, a new Chrome revelation, one that hasn't yet made the headlines, but which is detailed below, should serve as even more serious warning. Here's what you need to do now. Google is under fire this week after a surprising amount of data is harvested by Chrome has been disclosed. This is a genuine threat to your privacy. Worse, a more serious issue for Google, detailed below, hasn't even made headlines yet. Chrome is totally out of step with Safari, Edge, and Firefox, shattering Google's privacy-first web claims, all of which should give you serious reason to quit using Chrome today. This guy really, really doesn't like Chrome. Not that I think he's wrong. He's just very, very on the bandwagon about what he wants you to do with this article. Last year, when Apple said it would force the app developers to disclose the scale of data collected and linked to its users, all eyes turned to Google and Facebook. Many suspected this kind of scrutiny would shine an alarming light on the world's two most valuable data machines, and that's exactly what happened. The issue for Google is that, unlike Facebook, it sits on both sides of the fence, guarding your privacy on one side with Android and its mail, docs, and drive ecosystem, and an advertising behemoth on the other, collecting $100 billion-plus in ad spend and the majority of its annual revenue. In that regard, it's really no different to Facebook. And there's very little surprise that Apple's mandatory privacy labels have shown these two ad giants will be well out of step with their peers when it comes to collecting your data. If your business model is monetizing users' information, then you want to collect as much as you reasonably can, and Google and Facebook don't disappoint. Quote, Google doesn't care about protecting user privacy, unquote, privacy-centric DuckDuckGo warned this week. When Chrome's privacy label was finally revealed, quote, they care about protecting their surveillance business model. If they really cared about privacy, they would just stop spying on billions of people around the world, unquote. DuckDuckGo focused on the data that Google collects linked to its users. But there's a different data set in the detail included below that's much more damaging to Google and shows Chrome to be shockingly different to its rivals. The author has already warned that Gmail collects more data than other leading mail platforms. In its defense, Google pointed him to comments made by the CEO, Sundar Pichai, that said, we don't use information in apps where you primarily store personal content, such as Gmail, Drive, Calendar, and Photos for advertising purposes, period. You'll notice that Chrome is not on that list, nor is it an app, quote, where you primarily store personal data. But it is an app where you enter private and sensitive search terms and conduct private transactions. But what Chrome does have in common with Gmail is an out-of-step approach to data harvesting. Google took its time adding privacy labels, with a gap between app updates of some 3 months after the labels became mandatory. Now they can see the detail for Chrome, just as they did for Gmail. I really wish this guy would just get to the details, because he's half the article is just him waxing poetic about how terrible this is. Just as with Gmail, Chrome collects your user ID and device ID in too many categories. Unlike Safari, Edge, and Firefox, Chrome says it links all harvested data and devices to individuals. Safari collects but doesn't link browsing history, usage data, and locations to users. Neither does Firefox or Edge link data. Chrome says it collects all of those data fields and links them to user identities. The fact that Chrome collects more data, blah, 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 blah. Again, waxing poetic. Comparing Google and Microsoft makes more sense. Yeah, so he's comparing the email apps. And again, Gmail's collecting more than anybody else. It's not surprising anybody. Here's the real thing. They're collecting all the same information even when you click on incognito mode. That's this guy's big revelation. And again, he waxed poetic on for 3 more pages about why this is terrible. And obviously, it's not great. But, what's going on is not only is Chrome harvesting all kinds of, you know, your search history, your web history, everything you're doing, and linking it to your identity, but they're even doing that in incognito mode. Does this surprise anybody who's been paying
attention? Once again, imagine my shock.
So, I can see it still collecting the data in incognito, but it's still also linking it to you as well?
Apparently, yes. That's according to this article.
So there is no incognito mode.
Well, there's incognito mode in such that it's not going to show up in history on the device. And it's probably not going to show up in history in your Google account if you're signed in, like on an Android device or on your computer. But Google's still linking it somewhere in their database that you're, you know, whatever it is you're doing in incognito mode.
Okay.
So, I still say Firefox is the way to go for now. There's a few alternative builds of it out there, but Firefox proper is still okay. Now, they fired their security team, so eventually that's going to be a problem. But for presently, it's all right. What's even more fun is if you go digging and looking into Chrome add-ons, almost every Chrome add-on that actually works to protect privacy, you have to go get it off GitHub and install it manually because Google gets it out of the store really quick.
Yeah.
There was one that was pulled last week because it decoupled URL shorteners so that it went out to, I think it was an S3 or something like that. It would decode the shortened URL and then return you the actual URL so that you didn't bounce through the 5 or 6 trackers that most of those URL shorteners use these days. So, yeah, Chrome, they got that out of the App Store real quick. So, yeah, it's a little frustrating how many things say you have to use Chrome because that's the only browser they test in. But, and it's sad because Chrome is not bad technology as far as the web browser goes. But you need to, if you're going to keep using it, you need to find one of the de-Googled variants. And there are a few of them floating around because it's based off Chromium. But Google's crippling Chromium too, at least for a lot of their properties like YouTube and Gmail and stuff like that, if you're using those things. So, again, personal choice. If you don't care about that kind of stuff, that's, you know, totally up to you. But I still feel like you should, you know, understand the decisions you're making.
Yeah. Got another one?
Next one. This one's from CBS News, and if I could copy the link, I'd post it. Here. There's that one, and there's this one. This one's just kind of interesting from a good old-fashioned cyberpunk point of view. Twitter bans fake Amazon worker accounts posting anti-union messages. Apparently on the one of Amazon sites, their internal security team reported it as hacked because it was posting some, you know, stuff trolling some people really hard. Turns out it wasn't. It was just the people at Amazon trying to screw with these union votes as hard as they could. But, apparently somebody was spinning up Twitter bots to try to, mess with people's perspective of this. If you want to get into the skunk works, somebody else was doing this on Amazon's behalf to make Amazon look bad, knowing they were going to get caught doing it. You want to get a little 4D chess going on there.
I think half of Twitter is Twitter bots run by Twitter.
I have
just to keep the anger generated.
I have a feeling that Twitter is probably 3 times as many bots as it is people at this point.
That's what I think, man. I think a lot of it's generated controversy by Twitter just to keep the arguments going.
Well, they got to do something. They banned Trump, and so now, you know, that was probably the biggest source of anger for so many people.
I thought Facebook was hilarious. We can't even have his voice or likeness voice. Oh, like, wow. Okay, we are getting to the point where we're erasing people from history now. Maybe I can get on board with these accelerationist guys. You know, like it, more and more, it's, well, maybe there is something coming down the pipe that I maybe should be worried about because the language is starting to sound very, very interesting. As I said to you, Madman, we spend all that time reading about history and how glum it was and how terrifying it was, and now we get to play the home game. I'm looking forward
don't
to seeing.
Wish to list, I don't wish to live in interesting times. I just want to read about them.
I
like being
about
able
them.
To have Chinese delivered to my house, beer when I want it. I don't want to go through a war. No, I'm happy where I am.
Neither do I, but all signs point towards.
Okay. As a union vote by Amazon warehouse workers in Bessemer, Alabama, drew to a close this weekend, several Twitter accounts appearing to belong to warehouse workers at the company posted cheerful messages about work commitment at Amazon, or contentment would be the word. Yeah, I've only had an amount of bourbon, so you know, it's the 100 proof I like. The Evan Williams Bottled in Bond. That's the only Evan Williams I actually like, is their Bottled in Bond. Anyways.
I don't think I've tried it yet.
It's a little sharper than like a Woodford's, but I like it. It's a decent flavor on it. You know, you get a bit of that oak, a little no smoke. It's not a scotch or anything. It's just a sharper oak than like a Woodford's. Quote, unions are valuable tools at companies that don't provide good pay and benefits like Amazon does. We simply don't need them here, unquote. The account at Amazon FC Darla posted on Sunday, according to several media reports. In another tweet, the account said, quote, a lot of the people here who want unions are, let's just say, not team players, lol, unquote. The account was less than a month old, and its profile photo was a computer-generated, the tech site Gizmodo noted.
What are they? That's using? Lazy.
They're using that Unreal Engine people generator thing we were looking at a couple of weeks ago.
That's lazy.
Another account with an AI-generated photo, at Amazon FC Lulu, posted a tweet mocking stories of Amazon employees forced to relieve themselves in bottles because they didn't have enough time to use bathroom on their breaks. Vice reported, quote, I'm beginning to worry there's a problem with UTIs across the country, given how frequently many of you need a bathroom break, unquote, the account tweeted, per Vice. Both accounts are now suspended. Again, these things are less than a month old. If you're going to go trolling and making bot accounts, you need to be running these things for a long time before you start doing ops with them so that they don't look like fucking sock puppets.
Minimum of 6 months, at least one post a week.
Yeah, and it needs to be, you know, you need to actually have a life story for these people. So if somebody's casually reading, it doesn't, you know, it's like, wait, what do you mean you work at Amazon? I thought you were a college student at Harvard or, you know, something.
Remember, kids, trolling is an art form. Take some time. If you're going to do trolling today, you got to pre-think and you get it 6 months in advance. Start building a profile.
Treat it like an RP game, you know, build a character background, have a story, have their life, and, you know, make up what they would tweet and post it. And, you know, if you're wanting to make sure that they're, you know, fitting into a crowd, it's probably going to, you know, anything you write could probably seem vapid to you. And that's a good sign that you're probably doing it correctly.
If you start sounding absurd like the rest of them, you're doing it correct.
quote, a small number of accounts were permanently suspended for violating Twitter rules against impersonation, unquote, a Twitter spokesperson told CBS Money Watch. The spokesperson confirmed a Washington Post report that at least four accounts were suspended. Amazon told CBS Money Watch it found many accounts impersonating employees. Many of these are not Amazon FC ambassadors. It appears they are fake accounts that violate Twitter's terms. We've asked Twitter to investigate and take appropriate action, Amazon spokesperson Maria Bashotti said in a statement. Of course they did. What else are you going to say to that? Whether it was you doing it or not, what else are you going to say to that? You're not going to go out there and go, oh, shucks, you guys caught us. You ain't going to do that.
Same. Better luck next time. Would have got away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
No, you come out and say, I'm sorry, these employees were not authorized to speak on behalf of Amazon. They didn't look at our social media policy.
They have since been flogged. FC ambassadors are warehouse employees who tweet nice things about the company. The program first came to light in 2018 when Twitter users noticed that dozens of similar-looking accounts were posting relentlessly positive reviews of working at the e-commerce giant. All the accounts had usernames following the format of Amazon FC first name and mentioned specific fulfillment centers in their bio. Amazon confirmed at the time that the accounts were run by, quote, employees who work in our fulfillment centers and share facts based on their personal experience. One former ambassador said they received a $50 gift card and a paid day off for tweeting, while others said they don't get paid extra to tweet. You're doing it wrong, then. You're going to use, you know, you're going to run a social media presence for your company and you're not going to get paid extra to do it. You're doing it wrong.
Yeah, with an extra paid day off a week and a $50 gift card a month. I'm cheap.
On Wednesday.
It's crazy. I mean, there's another sort of place where they force employees to say nice things about them. You know, God damn.
China?
Oh. The obvious bit, if you have to say nice things about the place you work at or a fear of getting your job loss, that's you got more labor problems than you think than just unionizing.
Well, I guess the thing that I would assume most people would know this, especially if you work for fucking Amazon. I guess if they're smoking their own crack too much, though. Most people who are happy and content with their jobs aren't posting about that on, you know, they're not sitting there going on Twitter every day talking about how wonderful it is to work for somebody. You know, they might mention it once or twice, said, oh, no, it's great if somebody asks them. But most people who are happy with their job aren't saying very much about their job unprompted. Now, if they're, you know, now people who are unhappy about their job, they'll say all kinds of stuff unprompted.
Exactly.
But, you know, if somebody's happy with their job, they're not posting on Twitter how much they love Amazon. They're posting on Twitter about their kids, their dog, you know, a new toy that they bought, or they're one of those people who photographs their food and posts that before they, you know, eat it. Or I guess not if it's fake. I guess that was a thing on Instagram, was to, like, do the whole fake food thing, photograph it, and then not eat it because it was, like, wood glue and, you know, all the shit that they do for, you know, fast food photos. But anyways, doesn't matter. It's like, you know, if somebody's aggressively positive about something, 9 times out of 10, they're being paid.
Yeah. Or they're in fear.
Or, you know, they don't actually understand what's going on, so they're just mimicking their favorite people doing it. Apparently, there's so... What was I reading the other day? I think it was a Reddit post. Apparently, kids are doing YouTube videos, and they're doing Raid Shadow Legends spots, even though they're not being paid by Raid to do it, just because they see all the other YouTube channels doing it. And it's just like, that's sad.
That's pathetic. That's
fucking amazing for Raid Shadow Legends.
I mean, you know, they push that ad so much that people think that's just part of doing YouTube, is to read Raid ads.
Wow. I don't like this timeline anymore.
That has got to become, like, the most successful ad campaign ever.
Exactly.
When you have people doing fake ads for you.
I need to find the post again. It's one of those late night things. And it wasn't on this machine. It was actually on one of the tablets, because I woke up at 3 a.m. and was just reading shit. So I have to go find it. Anyways, on Wednesday, The Intercept published internal Amazon documents that describe the formation of the ambassador program, codename Veritas.
Oh, you know they were poking fun at somebody.
Read somewhere a guy put his nephew to bed. I mean, Rat, somebody could have been making it up for all I know. It was 3 a.m. and I was just, you know, reading. Kid said, thanks for coming. Remember to like and subscribe. Well, I mean, everybody says smash the like button now, too. So it's like, if you start a YouTube channel, you don't even know why you're saying this shit. It's like, isn't that just, you know, like, you know, it's like prayers people say where they don't understand the Latin anymore. They just keep copying the words.
they're getting rid of the like button again, aren't they? I was reading.
Dislike button, I think.
Well, apparently Biden videos are getting downvoted all to hell, so they're removing it off some of these channels.
Of course. Most popular president of all time, people. Didn't he fall down the stairs again yesterday?
I don't know.
What? Up the stairs or something? I don't know.
Try not to pay attention.
I can't keep up. Yeah, same.
Workers in the program have to have good attendance, good humor, and creative writing skills, according to the documents, and were trained to respond to negative tweets about worker pay, founder Jeff Bezos' wealth, or workers urinating in bottles. Like, if that's a common enough problem that it's in your bullet points about things you want your social media team responding to, maybe you should examine your working environments. You know, if you can't afford plumbing that much, bring in a Port-a-John or two or something. I mean, warehouses are big, although, you know, if you're going to bring in Port-a-Johns, at least make sure they vent outside, because, my God.
That one I almost want to call bullshit on, because I've been in middle management, and I've had to deal with the compliance when it comes to how you treat your workers. Every state has labor laws in place regarding breaks, how often they can be, and what constitutes a break. So I don't believe that people are having trouble pissing at Amazon. I think they might not like their breaks. They might even be worked too hard, but they have time to piss.
Well, it's either that or there's going to be the corners of the warehouse that you just hope that you're never accidentally ordering something from, because that's the piss corner.
Or like the filter employees, you know, don't go into the stairwell or anything like that, because there's probably people having sex with each other and smoking weed just to tolerate their day.
After news of the program became widespread, many parody accounts and imitators popped up. LOL, blinking is for when we're on our mini breaks we get, tweeted one such account at Amazon FC Becky. The account has since been suspended. And that's the thing. Okay, and so that is the thing, is it's like with this union thing has been pretty highly publicized. If Intercept puts out an article about this program, I could certainly see people putting up fake accounts just trying to troll, as well as to actually trying to make it look like Amazon's running bots. So I could see somebody doing, what'd you call that, a dirty tricks team or something like that, or PSYOP campaign?
That'd be a dirty tricks team.
Yeah, trying to make it look like Amazon's doing something dumb like that. Which, I mean, granted, I also wouldn't put it past Amazon, because surely, I mean, of course, well, so many companies get this wrong that they're so aggressively positive that it's like, that's a turnoff, you know? It's like, I think I'm going to run the other way. It's like the clown who's, you know, creepily smiling at you. It's like, nope, thanks, no thanks. You know, because one or two things are going to happen if I ever see one of those creepy clowns on the road. I'm either going to tackle the fucker and beat the shit out of it, or I'm just going to turn and go the other way.
I'm of the turn to go the other way fast.
Let's see. Just run the car off the road trying to run him over.
I only did that with a rabbit.
Creepy what on the road? Creepy clown. A couple of years back, there was a trend of people dressing up like clowns and standing on the side of the road, or, you know, on the edge of people's yards.
That was great.
When it was coming out.
Yeah, it's like, that's a great way to get shot. Because somebody's going to say, oh, hell no, and just shoot you.
Oh, speaking of creepy clowns, it looks like Milo's doing an interview right now. Oh, get to watch Creepy Clown later on.
Well, Amazon.
He hasn't stuck his at it for a while.
Anyway.
Yeah. Amazon has been in a contentious battle with pro-union workers at its massive warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, which has been open for less than a year. On Monday, 5,800 warehouse workers finished voting on whether to unionize within the retail, wholesale, and department store union. Ballots are currently being counted. You don't want to bet they lose those ballots if it's not going the right way. Last week, mocking Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren as being ineffective legislator, those tweets were removed from an official account at Amazon News, and from senior executive Dave Clark are still up. Oh, I misread it. Okay. Last week, mocking Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren as being ineffective legislators, this sentence is structured weirdly. I think somebody copy and pasted it weird. Those tweets are from an official Amazon account and from senior executive David Clark, and they're still up. Amazon did not provide a list of sanctioned ambassador accounts, nor did answer questions from CBS Money Watch on what difference fake accounts from employees paid to tweet. Parody and fan accounts on Twitter are permitted as long as they disclose their status, Twitter noticed or noted. The company added that Amazon Ambassadors Program does not itself violate Twitter's policies. So, imagine somebody, sure, rats, let's run the scenario. Imagine somebody swatted a cop and the cop shot back to defend themselves. Well, I would imagine if they're a cop, they're going to recognize the sound of somebody yelling, "Police, open up," because that's usually what SWAT teams do. What usually happens is the person getting swatted has headphones on and doesn't hear them until they're crashing through the door.
Yeah.
But I would imagine a police officer would recognize those sounds and probably know what's going on and know not to shoot at their coworkers as they come through the door. That said, if they did, you'd have some hot cop-on-cop action there, and you're right, I don't know that the news would know what to do with that one.
White supremacist shootout?
Damn,
I have no idea, man. I just take my cues from the media, man. I know what I'm reading. I think there was an incident a few years back where someone did open up on the cops when they were coming through the door from a swatting incident.
That's happened a couple of times. In fact, the Breonna Taylor thing, they think, was a case of that, where apparently her boyfriend did shoot at the cops before they unloaded through the door.
Yeah.
Because later he said, "I didn't know they were cops. They're just people beating down my door." And I guess because he was a drug dealer, he thought it was, you know, somebody coming in to steal his stuff. So
steal his stash, yeah. I watched the video yesterday where cops were surrounded a house serving a warrant. And cop took a round to the vest, stayed in the fight, and then took a round to the neck.
Well, that's a day record.
It was a pretty interesting raid. The dude had some hardware too. I have to ask Saad what sort of firearm it was, because it was either heavily modified, like its appearance, or I haven't seen a gun like this before. Anyway.
Oh, okay. They're correcting me in the IRC. Apparently, Breonna Taylor's ex was the dealer. Her current boyfriend was not, but owned a legal firearm and only fired once until they said police, but at that point, they were already returning fire. So, okay. Well, yeah, I don't know the details. I just remembered
it. Neither do I.
So, they raided it looking for somebody they already had locked up. Well, that sounds like American bureaucracy, doesn't it?
he was having stuff shipped to her apartment, which is why it was being raided. So they were going for the drugs as much as going for him.
Ah.
Yeah, that was a tip-off from the Postal Service or something.
Don't accept packages from your drug-dealing boyfriend, especially after you've broken up. If you still get the crack delivered to your house, the cops are still interested in you.
That's
sage words there, Madman.
Sound advice there, Madman.
Yeah.
All right, next article is from The Verge. Microsoft is shutting down Cortana on iOS and Android. I don't know why anybody would bother to install Cortana on iOS or Android, which is probably why they're shutting it down. I'm pretty sure both of those already have voice assistants. Microsoft has shut down its Cortana app for iOS and Android. It's the latest in a series of moves to end support for Cortana across multiple devices, including Microsoft's own Surface headphones. The Cortana app for iOS and Android is no longer supported, and Microsoft has removed it from the App Store and the Play Store. Quote, as we announced in July, we will be ending support for the Cortana app on Android and iOS as Cortana continues its evolution as a productivity assistant. Unquote, reads a Microsoft support note spotted by MacRumors. As of March 31st, 2021, the Cortana content you created, such as reminders and lists, will no longer function in the Cortana mobile app, but can still be accessed through Cortana in Windows. I'm pretty sure nobody uses that either. Cortana reminders, lists, and tasks are now available in the Microsoft To-Do app instead. Microsoft first launched Cortana for iOS and Android in December 2015. The app was originally designed to connect to Windows 10, PCs, and mobile phones, but failed to gain traction despite a big redesign. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella recognized that the company's difficulties in competing with other digital assistants a couple of years ago, revealing that Microsoft no longer saw Cortana as a competitor to Alexa and Google Assistant. Microsoft had once envisioned a future full of Cortana-powered fridges, toasters, and thermostats, a dream that came to an end earlier this month when the first and only Cortana speaker removed Microsoft Digital's Assistant. Other devices like the Cortana-powered glass thermostat are also no longer powered by Microsoft's Digital Assistant. So would they hook them up to Alexa or something? Cortana isn't completely finished, though. Microsoft still sees value in the controversial AI, or the conversational AI, and the company is trying to reposition Cortana as an assistant that can improve Microsoft's enterprise-focused offerings. Oh, so they're going to go compete with IBM's Deep Blue, or whatever the thing was that was playing chess, because they sell it to the medical industry and as part of QRadar and things like that. So...
one thing that hurt Cortana,
Watson,
Microsoft,
thank you, Rats,
get a,
Watson,
a good phone out that people wanted to buy.
Well, I mean, they've got it across all the Windows devices, like everybody's laptops and Surfaces and desktops, but I turn it off on all of my devices because I don't need Microsoft cataloging everything I type, and I push the policies at work that turn it off across our fleet because nobody... okay, to use Cortana, it's capturing everything you type into your computer and sending it up to Microsoft servers so it can search it. Psychro says nobody wanted a voice assistant backed by Bing.
Depending on the industry you're in, it would be illegal to use Cortana.
That's one of the reasons we turn it off.
Like, do you work in the medical industry? Guess who can't use Cortana?
You work in the financial industry? Guess what you really shouldn't be doing? So, I mean, surprising nobody that this thing has failed. I mean, that's the thing with Microsoft. When they do one of these also-rans that they're just shoving into their stuff, it almost always fails to ever make it outside of their stuff. You know, even when you're doing enterprise networks, if you're doing a total Microsoft shop, it actually works pretty well. The moment you start trying to integrate anything that's not Microsoft, whether it's like a Google service or, you know, Macs or Linux machines, it gets fucked up all to hell. I mean, quick. So, yeah, I don't know how many people in financial medical have Siri or Google assistants listening. I don't know, but the number of times I see those stupid Alexa smart speakers in like a banker's office pisses me off. You know, I've been doing some house stuff lately, and one of the mortgage brokers I walked into had a fucking Alexa speaker, you know, in the office, and I just said, you know what, I'll come back later, and then just never came back, because I'm like, I'm not discussing my finances with you with Amazon listening.
What's wrong with you? You got nothing to hide, have you?
I have lots of things to hide. Most of them are under the bed. Some of them are going into the new Harry Potter hole that's going in my new house. I specifically requested a spot under the stairs that I could hide bodies. Anyways, Xbox is more liked as a brand than Windows. I totally believe that, Psychros.
That statement, the Harry Potter hole, just never again.
Fair enough. I was referring to a cupboard under the stairs, but...
I was not.
I know that.
My mind went completely different.
I mean, and here we are back at malicious penetration all over again.
Exactly.
And Windows being the sluttiest operating system out there. Anyway.
One day I'll have to send my therapist these MP3s. They're in my head.
What was the name I gave you earlier? Well, Chala's future therapist, enjoy. Okay, next one I have is actually from NVIDIA. This is pretty cool. GeForce GPU pass-through for Windows Virtual Machines is being supported in the current beta that they pushed out on March 30th. So hopefully this is going to be hitting their mainline driver soon. But... You know, it sounds like you'd have the craziest stories and no one could tell no one if it's true. Oh, or are you in a nursing home? Not more. Yeah, I'm not going to have crazy stories.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. But so what this means, if anybody's ever tried to do the whole Windows gaming VM and pass a video card to it, the GeForce drivers by default will throw an error. It's usually error 43, but there's a few others it could throw. Because for the longest time, if you wanted to do virtual machines, NVIDIA wanted you to buy a very expensive Quattro card, not a gaming card. And now they're starting to at least support the idea of passing a GPU through to a VM without having it freak out on you. So that's cool. It's not going to let you do the thing that some of the high-end Quattros let you do, where you can have one GPU card and then let multiple VMs use it. And actually, you know, split out the resources among VMs. That's really more for doing CUDA calculations than it is doing games. This is really to support, you know, somebody who's building a machine that's going to run a couple of virtual machines and be able to pass the GPU through to games, like a Linux mainline Linux machine and a Windows gaming VM kind of thing. But it's cool that they're supporting it, because at least they're figuring out that that is the thing that people want to do. And a lot of people are doing stupid hacks to get around it anyway, so it's kind of dumb not to just allow it. So, anyways, very cool, especially if you're doing any virtual machine work. And that certainly opens up the possibilities in the future if you're wanting to do more interesting workstation builds with, like, Windows VMs with, you know, actual graphics acceleration. Because that's usually what kills your Windows VM, is the whole virtual video card is just usually crap. Let's see. And last article I have for tonight is from the BBC News. We have your porn collection, The Rise of Extortion War. And I'm totally reading this because I think it's hilarious. I've been seeing these for years, but the fact that it's starting to make it in the mainline news is even funnier. Cybersecurity companies are warning about the rise of so-called extortionware, where hackers embarrass victims into paying a ransom. Experts say the trend towards ransoming sensitive private information could affect companies, not just operationally, but also through reputation damage. It comes as hackers bragged after discovering an IT director's secret porn collection. The targeted U.S. firm has not publicly acknowledged that it was hacked. In its darknet blog post about the hack last month, the cybercriminal gang named the IT director whose work computer allegedly contained the files. It also posted a screen grab of the computer's file library, which included more than a dozen folders cataloged under the names of porn stars and porn websites. You'd think an IT director would know better than to save it on his work computer.
Yeah.
It's like, flash drives exist. Yeah. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Or, I don't know, why are you looking at porn at work? That's even worse.
That's another one, man.
It just occurred to me, oh, God, what's he doing in that office?
Yeah.
Gross.
Nope.
It's like, save that for home, hiding in the
Madman
closet.
Madman disconnected from your channel.
Oh, Madman couldn't even take it. My God.
Well, he's off to work. He has to sort out some files on his work computer. Madman will be back next week, right after he pays a small fee. Just a small fee.
The infamous hacker group wrote, "Thank God for named IT director. While he was masturbating, we downloaded..."
Madman joined your channel.
"We downloaded several hundred gigabytes of private information about his company's customers. God bless him, his hairy palms, amen."
Wow.
That's a post. The blog post has been deleted in the last couple of weeks, which experts say usually implies that the extortion attempt worked and the hackers have been paid to restore data and not publish any more details. Oh, well, that's possible.
If they didn't want me looking at porn at work, they wouldn't have me working 80 hours a week.
The company did not respond to requests for comments. The same hacker group is also currently trying to pressure another U.S. utility into paying a ransom by posting an employee's username and password for a members-only porn website.
Wow.
How fired was he? Hopefully very, very quickly. And very much so. Let's see, another ransomware group, which is also has a darknet website, shows the use of similar tactics. The relatively new gang has published private emails and pictures and is calling directly for the mayor of a hacked municipality in the U.S. to negotiate its ransom. In another case, hackers claim to have found an email trail showing evidence of insurance fraud at a Canadian agriculture company. Brett Callow, a threat analyst at cybersecurity company Immisoft, said the trend points to an evolution of ransomware hacking. This is the new norm. Hackers are now actually searching the data for information that can be weaponized. If they find anything that is incriminating or embarrassing, they'll use it to leverage a larger payout. These incidents are no longer simple cyber attacks about data. They're full-out extortion attempts. They've been full-out extortion attempts for years. This is not new. The fact that they're just now talking about it is interesting, but this is not new. I had to explain to some very embarrassed junior security analysts that the email that they were reading was fake because they didn't know what to do with it when one of the VPs showed up with this email saying, I don't know what this is, make it go away. And yeah, it's full on, you know, we hacked your phone and watched you while you were doing something, you know, pay us so much Bitcoin or we're going to post it to everyone you know. It's nine times out of 10, it's fake. This one sounds like they're actually starting to try to find real ones that they can use to extort people, like, you know, the guy with the porn stash on his work computer. Another example of this was seen in December 2020 when the cosmetic surgery chain The Hospital Group was held ransom with the threat of publication of before and after images of patients. That's rough. Look, her old nose. No, we all know that's not the photos they were using. Before the silicone, after the silicone.
How much did they get? How many gigs of pitches?
No, they didn't say.
Is there anywhere location?
It's like, what website was that on? I want to know so I can avoid it.
I have
a URL?
It's I'm investigating for a friend.
Ransomware has evolved considerably since it first appeared decades ago, blah, 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 blah. Tough to defend against. This latest trend, yeah, this is the thing I wanted to talk about. This latest trend of threatening to publicly damage an organization or individual has particularly concerned experts because it's hard to defend against. Keeping good backups of company data helps businesses to recover from ransomware attacks, but that's not enough when the hackers are using extortion tactics. Cybersecurity consultant Lisa Ventura said employees should not be storing anything that could harm a firm reputationally on company servers. Training around this should be provided by organizations to all their staff. Training around this. This is the thing that bothers me. You have to tell people, don't look at porn on your work computer.
That should be a given.
I mean, come on. You really have to tell people that this day and age?
Clearly.
I mean, for fuck's sake, if you've got a porn addiction that bad, use your fucking phone and make sure it's not tied to the company servers either, and don't get on the company Wi-Fi. And preferably go home. Don't do it in the fucking office, weirdo. That's the grossest thing. It's like you really think somebody's sitting there banging away in their office?
This is why shit's way out of whack, man.
Individuals are doing it, but I'm certain someone somewhere is banging away in their office.
Well, okay. But when you're asking maintenance people to install the toilet paper holder under your desk, I mean...
This is why we're at where we're at, because people think that, you know, that's perfectly fine. Pornography at work is fine. Or in front of other people, fine. No, no, it's not, people. We'll pay a price for this degeneracy at the end of the day.
Yeah. To close out the article here, by identifying factors such as reputational damage, it offers far more leverage to extort money from victims. A lack of victim reporting and a culture of cover-up makes estimating the overall financial cost of ransomware difficult. Expert at Immisoft estimate that ransomware instance in 2020 cost as much as $170 billion in ransom payments, downtime, and disruption. And I totally believe it, because these assholes running these extortion schemes wouldn't still be doing it if people weren't paying them.
Yeah. Yep. Fucking crazy.
You know, rats, there's a meme image that's floating around. It's a little comic strip. It's you know, they're training their new security guy. And it says, security here is very important. We've done a lot of really stupid things, and we want to make sure nobody finds out about them. So, let's do this. It did it again. Fox.
Did it again.
Okay, I can't put off building a new soundboard any longer. This thing's about to blow up. Okay, last one is from Go350, and it is a full guide on exfiltrating files over DNS. So this is actually really fucking cool. It's not as blind as it used to be. A lot of next-gen sites and things like that, or firewalls, do look at DNS traffic. And guys who know what they're doing will usually set up controlled DNS flow. But anyways, so what this thing does is it's a series of scripts, or, well, programs. It's a guide on using a program called DNS Exfil. Basically, you set up a DNS server, you use DNS, or you use this DNS Exfil, and you can actually send files from a machine to the receiving machine over the DNS server, over DNS, not HTTP, not a file transfer, not BitTorrent. So if you're looking for a sneaky way of getting a file out of a system, this is a pretty good guide to it. And it's been a bit since I've played with this stuff, but it absolutely is the correct way to do it. You just have to set up a DNS server to handle it. And it'll send... It basically MD5's a file. Well, no, it doesn't MD5. He's using it to check it. It encodes a file into text, serializes it, and then sends it out as part of DNS requests, and then the server receives it and, rebuilds the file on the receiving end. But it's definitely a fun technique, and it's something you should be aware of. And if you're doing the defensive side of the house, maybe you want to block everything but the main DNS servers you're telling people to use. you probably shouldn't allow third-party DNS outside of your main, company DNS servers, and then those should only be allowed to point to probably the root or, like, the Google or the Cloudflare or, like, I guess if your ISP is running one, you could use that. But you want to control your DNS traffic is my point, and make sure it's not going to random third-party DNS servers, because it is a way somebody could, exfil data. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream every Thursday. We're always working on it. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the IRC, the subreddit, and the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Cycros, DPView, Herats, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Cletus Jackson Jr., closing thoughts.
Either TeamSpeak or Windows hates me because my mic got randomly muted in software.
And
sounds like a TeamSpeak issue.
I actually don't know how. I'm not even going to try to say that stupid Aboriginal name again. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I'm pretty sure that's not even an Aboriginal name.
That's what the Google. I Google searched for Abo name, and that's what came back.
That television show you were talking about, Morps, Invincible.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. I enjoyed the first three episodes. I'm giving that a recommendation, and I'm going to try the new Godzilla film tonight in my massive studio that I built totally with the money I made from Galaxy 15 and then bought a copy from the studio. I'm not pirating. Anyway, off my lawn.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Thompson goes down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.